Brad Card, good morning.
Hey, Jack.
What do you think of that ABC and it follows that CNN poll in some regards?
Yeah, look, at Trump is leading Joe Biden right now. And I believe the stars are aligning, I hate to say it, against Joe Biden. Even when there are things that, you know, Donald Trump did an interview with Time magazine that, in my opinion, was incredibly bad for Donald Trump. You're not talking about it. I haven't seen much anybody talk about it really on mainstream media. And the things that Donald Trump said and the questions that he, the questionable responses that he gave, that quite frankly would be unconstitutional for him to do. Nobody's up in arms.
And of course, this isn't the first time, right? He said bombastic.
Literally saying that, basically saying that saying what he has proven himself to do, where he doesn't care about the Constitution, like many of us do, and he would be willing to basically suspend. You know, he's already called for suspending the Constitution, and he says basically that in his interview with Time magazine, where he would have the power of the purse, not Congress, and Congress is specifically authorized to have the power of the purse. So things like that. But as you start getting into this, the Southwest border is so important because it shows the president's willingness to protect this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's how people, they break it all down at the end of the day. It's about not letting illegal immigrants come and take this country over without vetting people. We're not doing a good job vetting people. We have terrorists. We have gang members coming into this country. And it doesn't need to be a lot. As you know, a few bad apples can spoil the bunch.
Another one in the poll I just want to mention, you're touching upon indirectly, is crime in major cities is a concern for people.
Well, and that's the thing, Jack. I mean, we see what happened in New York City with these nitwit thugs, these criminals, the illegal criminals that were in this country, beating the daylights out of police officers, and they're in jail for 30 seconds, and they're out, and they get on a bus, and they're heading to California. I mean, people find that unacceptable, and they're right to find that unacceptable. And Joe Biden still really won't address the Southwest border. Now we have everything coming up with what's going on in Israel with Hamas and what's going on our campuses, and the president won't condemn it to the point that he should. We have college presidents that have just been out of control woke, that a lot of I think a lot of Republicans have been way overboard playing this woke card. But when you come down to it, you see what's going on in these college campuses. They're putting up tents. Now you're negotiating with these students, negotiating to have peace on your campus. No,
I know.
That's not what we should be doing. You can't negotiate with crazy.
I know.
You can't negotiate with terrorists, quite frankly. And these people support Hamas. It's crazy.
I know, Brad. I want to come back, though, to something you're talking about on the Biden-Trump stuff in this poll. So you and I, you've said for a few weeks now that you think Joe Biden is reelection. You just said the stars and whatever are aligning against him, that he's underwater, he's in trouble. But let me ask you this. If you're in the Biden camp and you're looking at reelection here, and you know that the Democrats and whoever the independents are who care about abortion rights will circle the wagon on abortion rights and health care. That's about it for Biden. But all these other indicators in the poll, inflation, economy, southern border, southwest border, the two wars, crime, Trump is more trustworthy. And again, pocketbook issues, wallet issues. So if you're the Biden White House, where do you gain ground beyond abortion rights and health care? How do you convince Americans that you can be trusted to deal with the economy when most have already concluded that Trump would do a better job? What do you do if you're in that Biden camp?
I know some pretty senior folks in the Biden administration. I talk to them. They are frustrated that Joe Biden's not taking executive action on the Southwest border. These are internal people in the Biden White House. I'm frustrated.
But what about the economy? How does Biden gain some trust when inflation has continued and people just are running out of money to pay for things in their life and they're working, you know, low unemployment rate? Obviously, the economy is a problem and going to be an issue this fall.
The economy is a problem. I think what you do, Jack, and I mean this, I think the Southwest border carries over to all aspects. I think when you start talking about the southwest border, the lawlessness that we see, where we see people jumping into, you know, coming into these stores and robbing stores, and the, you know, these flash mobs that show up, it's just an there's like a sense of lawlessness that the American people just can't accept, and they're seeing it as being acceptable to to Joe Biden. So I if I'm in the Biden White House, I am screaming at the president, mm-hmm. please take executive action on the southwest border. And you can have the Remain in Mexico, and it, at the very least, and you could call it something different. You got to say the political game. But at the end of the day, we've got to keep this country safe. And so that's what we're seeing is the big issue. And I think it spills over to everything else. And if you can't be trusted on protecting our borders, you're not going to be you're not going to have the confidence of the American people.
Right.
On any issues.
I want to throw this one at you, Brad Card. One thing that I'm surprised, and I do want to end on the Speaker Johnson question this week on that vote and what you think will happen before we let you go, because you're an expert on the legislative congressional stuff. Brad, one story that I think both parties, regardless of the president, they're both responsible. Biden, I think, has been unbelievable in this in a bad way, but $34, $35 trillion in debt. Why doesn't Trump at this point also throw out there, even if it's just rhetoric, with the economy, inflation, and explain simply to Americans how much that imbalance of debt does hurt people and makes it worse with inflation, and say, if I'm elected again, we're going to seriously address the debt and start cutting spending in Washington in areas we can. Even if he doesn't say specifics, it's going to be received.
Because Donald Trump doesn't have credibility on the debt.
No, but what I'm saying, why not try and grab that mantle and start that? Throw it into your repertoire.
I'm telling you, in part because he doesn't have the credibility on the debt. He was horrible for us.
I know, but you're missing my point. Biden isn't going to do it. Bill Clinton was the last president I know that really cut into this situation. This is getting out of control. Why doesn't Trump even if he doesn't have the credibility, just talk about it?
I think it's because he doesn't care about the debt. I don't believe he cares about it. He believes debt is good. He works with debt, and he's talked about that many times.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
He's talked about it. He doesn't view debt as being bad.
That's a good point.
And look, Donald Trump is the guy that gave checks to every American that under a certain threshold, whether or not they had a job or not.
You just made it. You just made an excellent.
Federal government payroll,
yep.
And whether they were still going to be getting paychecks.
Yep.
We were giving, you know, federal workers, congressional staff, Social Security recipients that weren't going to miss a paycheck.
No, you just made a very good point.
We were giving them money.
You know, you just missed a good point. See, he's very comfortable with it. Foy, what you go?
He's comfortable with the debt.
Speaker vote, what's going to happen?
Boy, Jack, I think we're going to see something come forward this week. Marjorie Taylor Greene, in my opinion, the whack job that she is going to push forward to try to get this motion to vacate. And she's got a couple people on it. I think you'll see a very few number of hard Freedom Caucus guys. Led by Tom Massey from Kentucky, kind of rallying behind that. We'll probably see Chip Roy get on there too. They'll have a handful of votes, but I think the Democrats are going to save, and they're going to save them by not voting for the speaker, but they'll take a walk. These people won't, you know, they won't vote in the election, and so that will, the number of votes would be offset. So therefore, the speaker will be able to be saved, quite frankly, by the Republican conference, with the fact that a few Democrats aren't going to be in the room.
Brad Card, you were on. Okay, real quickly, game one tonight up down in Florida. No one knew you're probably going. We know what an overtime win. What a play with Pasta dumping, picking up that puck behind the defense. Okay, so what do you have game one tonight? Always important. What do you have?
Well, my heart and soul was Boston Bruins. And I am a fanatical Boston Bruins fan. I'm worried about this matchup. I mean, I think Florida.
Well, you should be. Look at last year.
Hockey.
Yeah.
Well, Florida is playing their best hockey, and the Bruins are not playing their best hockey. I was really disappointed with the play of some of the defensemen. Charlie McAvoy, I think, has struggled. He's had some really bad giveaways. I mean, we saw Carlo when he fell down going into the boards, and that turnover caused the goal. I mean, we have to really step up. Pasta and Marchand, quite frankly, in Game 7, weren't doing all that much until that great play where Pasta turned the Jets on and came back in and made a great move.
When you watch that again, I watched it 10 times in the morning. I watch it live. Did he turn the Jets on. He just barely stayed onside, and he was just gone like a rocket. Brad, my only quick take on this, because I love talking this with you, is real quick. whenever the team has been off a little bit and they've been practicing, the Panthers, they've had to wait a little bit. Bruins are coming out with just really a day or so rest with some momentum and some emotion. They got to carry that emotion and try and get a win in the first game here, because it gives them a little bit. But you know what? I think this one, too, will go to seven games, and who knows? All right, Brad Carr.
I don't know. I hope it does, Jack, because it's good for hockey. We certainly have a lot of great hockey being played right now.
And you notice all that happened up in Toronto and Bruins win without the agitators. Thank you, Brad.
All right, we'll see you. Have a great day.
Doug Tengden, WorldMarketAdvisors.com. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
I'm all right. All right, thank you. Hope you had a good weekend.
It was wonderful. It was a wonderful weekend. Nice and quiet. Little rainy yesterday.
Yeah, in the afternoon. But enjoy today and tomorrow this week. Doug, I'm not going to get political with you, I promise, but I do.
You break your promises all the time, Jack.
I'm not a politician, Doug. Not a politician. I don't.
Yeah.
But seriously, it's been an interesting year with the economy. Experts like you, our friends at Bank of America, and you've all been sort of saying the same thing for the last year or two. We're going to avoid a recession, Eventually, the Fed will start lowering these high rates that have doubled. And guess what? We are maybe going to avoid a recession, but I'm sensing the economy, and this ABC poll is showing it to me, with 2,200 likely voters in November, the economy is rising as an issue of what's concerning to them. And usually when the economy is booming, we have low unemployment. But the problem is inflation and everything costs so damn much. Affordable housing. Now, all of a sudden, people's wallets and pocketbooks do matter to them. And that's a sign to me that the economy may be a bigger issue going into this election than I would have thought 6 months ago.
I totally agree. And I think it's an issue of trust in the experts as well. And people aren't stupid. It's an issue. It's kind of like the Groucho Marx line, you know, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? People hear, oh, inflation is only running at 3%. You know, it's much better than it was. But, you know, they go out to eat and it costs them $100. They buy a cup of coffee and it's going to cost $10. Now there's a coffee shortage and the price of raw beans is going to go up. Everything just costs a lot more, and they say, well, you know, why? And that's what I think is getting people worked up on the economy.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then you have other things that so quickly can affect the economy, like the Middle East, like Ukraine, on things like energy prices and all that. And then switching gears, you know, I think a lot of people are concerned on some other issues. What else is catching your eye this morning, Doug?
Well, what caught my eye last week was, of course, the Fed keeping rates unchanged, and Jay Powell saying, no, we're not planning on raising rates. There was some fear of them raising rates again. No, that's not on the table. But they'll keep rates where they are for a while until they're certain that inflation is heading back towards their target. Inflation right now is running at about 3%. And they want to see it running at 2%, so they'll just leave rates where they are, and maybe they'll cut rates in August. It's now the market is saying, well, maybe in November, which the November Fed meeting is like 2 days after the election. You were saying the election's only 6 months out. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, isn't that amazing? Because it seems like that's a long time, but let me ask you a question. How long ago does March Madness seem to you? Or the Masters golf, or your last ski run. It already seems like that was a couple months ago. It was just a few weeks ago. So time goes very quickly.
That's right. That's right. No, and I think what has people concerned is this issue of inflation, and then what has a lot of people concerned is the pictures that they see about the border. You know, it just sort of gets our lizard brains going, and we just can't get it out of our head. It's like, you know, this just seems crazy.
It does. All right, Doug, you make it a good one. Enjoy today and tomorrow, milder and better than Wednesday and Thursday. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, have a great week.
John, I need you to run with this one a little bit. Thank you for joining us. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. Tell us what's going on in Citizens
Good
Bank.
Morning, Jack.
Yeah, take it away.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We are a small orthotic prosthetic opened up about a year ago here in the Seacoast area. Really to provide services for veterans and their families, although we do see all kinds of retirees. We usually service patients with diabetes and neuropathy, MS, the patients that have had strokes, that kind of thing. And with the VA, it tends to be very difficult sometimes on the waiting period.
Mm-hmm.
I'm personally a veteran. I was a Gulf War veteran. And, you know, what we wanted to do is really bring an opportunity to the community so we can service the patient. The patient's the number one, you know, priority for us. So we do provide mobile services.
Awesome.
We work with all five of the wound care centers in the area. And we have hospital privileges at five of the hospitals in the Seacoast area. We are based in Portsmouth, but we do provide mobile services. So we see patients in the office, and we also see them at their homes or at the hospital or therapy.
Awesome.
Or long-term care facility.
John, now I'm making the connection because we had a lot going on this morning coming out of the weekend. Now I make the connection why I wanted this on was the Veterans Connection. Thank you for your service. John, I love this.
Yes, sir.
I love the sound of it. I love the fact that you're focusing on the patient and making it easy, whether it's going to their home or having them come in. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? Because this is very innovative. It's a real solution out of Portsmouth. And, of course, we have a lot of listeners here. Tell us a little more about you and what made you kind of come to this a little more in detail, because it's a great concept.
Sure. Well, I have about 30 years experience in providing healthcare services to patients. Background in orthopedics. So I was an orthopedic physician assistant, assisted in orthopedic surgery, and then became board certified as an orthotist to treat patients for custom orthotics, bracing, and mm-hmm. prosthetics. And Navy trained for 5 years, was overseas for 2.5 of that, and really got a lot out of the military, and just finally was in a place. My parents retired here, and my brother and his family live here. And so it's been a real opportunity to come to this area
that.
And, you know, really try to fill a void.
Where are you from originally?
Originally from Austin, Texas.
Awesome. I like, too, and you mentioned some of the frustrations on getting the care if you're a veteran, and I love the veteran focus, making it easier and so forth. Now, who qualifies for this, John? If some veteran needs some support or help, what's the deal? What's the deal on how a veteran can find out, or a veteran caregiver, if they qualify? How can they find out? Can they get an informational visit?
Well,
is it
sure.
Does their insurance, their coverage of the VA cover the, talk about the details.
Yeah. So patients can call our office or they can schedule online. We try to make it really easy for them. We don't charge for assessments to meet with the patient to evaluate if they've had an old, you know, brace, it's not working anymore, custom orthotics, orthopedic shoes, you know, if they've had an amputation. These are things that we try to spend as much time with the patient as possible. When it comes to reimbursement with insurance, we work with the patient. So in terms of the financial situation of the patient, the patient has hardship or they're having difficult time with co-pays or deductibles, or the VA is going to take months to see them,
mm-hmm.
That's a remedy that we provide. So I'm never going to turn a patient down in terms of what we can do for them. We will always do our best, and if somebody can't afford, you know, a brace or a custom orthotic or prosthetic, we'll go out of our way to make sure that they get into brace or orthotic.
Now, you have that orthopedic background, John. Hasn't technology come a long way in this area, too?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. We provide 3D scanning, so we make it really easy for the patient. We don't have to cast in most cases. Our turnaround time is very quick, usually within a week or two after we see the patient, after
awesome.
We scan them. We're able to provide the device for them.
I love it. Now, again, you mentioned informational assessment appointments that veterans in particular can come in and no cost. What's the website, phone number?
Yep.
And again, I also just give us the contact info. It would be great.
Sure. No, I appreciate that. The website is port-ortho.com. That's port-ortho.com. And our call-in number is 603-373-9020. And we have 24-hour answering service
awesome.
Along with live people as well.
Where are you located, John? Maybe sometime I'll stop in and say hi in Portsmouth.
Yeah, it'd be great. We're right on 170 Commerce Way in Portsmouth
mm-hmm.
on the second floor.
Awesome. Well, best of luck to you, John. And again, port-ortho.com. Check it out. I'm putting a big shout out. And of course, a week from this Wednesday, the 15th, we go 12 hours right here on my show and our network for veterans. It's my 10th annual Make 12 Hours Count for Veterans Count, part of Easter Seals. And they do a lot with care coordinators, financial support and assistance for veterans in our region in New England and right here in northern New England. So 12 hours a week from Wednesday. And I'd love maybe I'll reiterate a follow up on letting some of the veterans know that you're out there looking to support and help. And thank you for your service, John.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
And what's the name of the practice, John?
Fort Smith Orthopedics.
Awesome. Thank you, sir, and thank you for supporting the veterans. Thank you. Aaron Real, Messina's Radio National Correspondent, talking about inflation in a different way and brand loyalty. Take it away, Aaron.
Yes. So brand loyalty is kind of something that you get to have when you have options and times are flush. Not so much. And people who are willing to die on that Chips Ahoy Hill are reconsidering it, given where we are with inflation. Long story short, the numbers don't lie. And what we have seen is that folks are done with all of the increases, whether it be Wendy's or McDonald's or Kraft Heinz. They're not going to pay it anymore. Fast food prices in March were up 33% compared to 2019 levels. This is according to the Labor Department. Grocery prices up 26%, neither of which are sustainable for a long time and put many people in a position where they're just like, I'm not buying anything at McDonald's. I'm not buying anything at Starbucks. And we're beginning to see the traffic drop. If you look at Starbucks, they dropped 7%. That's one of the most they've ever dropped since they began. And it has a lot to do with the fact that a tall mocha is, and that's a small, by the way, a $5.25. No, thank you. We'll buy coffee and drink it at home.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned the mocha thing. I think it was Saturday. I had an early meeting, and I just happened to. I normally like to just grab something, you know, like breakfast bar. You believe it or not, pretty healthy. I'm not a big what are they called? Nature's, you know, the granola bar. Mm-hmm. And I was out, so I just stopped at, let's just say, one of my analysts, Brad Card, loves McDonald's. I'm not a big fast food goer. But I just got a typical, you know, biscuit, what do you call, biscuit, egg and cheese and bacon. No water, no orange juice, just that. What do you think that costs with tax? I was like, wow, that, but, and I just was surprised. What do you think like a bacon, a biscuit, egg and cheese cost today?
I'm going to say today, like $7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With tax, it was like.
Oh, that's only because I've been like covering this story for a while.
It was $6.98.
Yeah.
$6.98 with tax. I'm like, wow, that's, you know, a biscuit. One little piece of bacon. And by the way, the piece of bacon is not like when you and I, you know, if I'm cooking for
right.
you guys, family's over, bacon, pancakes, you know, you get plenty of bacon, couple pieces each. It was just one little piece of bacon, probably a speck of cheese. And I don't know, they do the eggs in the micro and a little biscuit. You think, I'm guessing, $3 max, almost $7.
Exactly. And people are just saying, no, I'm not doing that. I'll make the awesome bacon at home.
Yeah.
Or we're not eating here today. Like, and it's one thing when it was fast and convenient and cheap.
Yeah.
If you're missing one of those three elements, we're done here. And they're seeing that now, the fast food restaurants and also, you know, the Mondelez's of the world.
And also, I thought you were going to real quickly on brand loyalty. When you grocery shop, and I'm over there once or twice a week. In New England, I'm a Hannaford, not a Market Basket, no offense. But when you grocery shop, are you a big fan of going the generic versus, like you mentioned, like the Chips Ahoy? Like, so, you know, I'm just throwing one out there. I'm not picking on Triscuits or crackers. Do you say they have a generic or butter? Generic. Do you actually save money going the generic? I think you do, right?
You save a significant amount. And I will be the first to say I have done enough stories on this that I am proudly all about the generic one to a point where I'm like, I just don't want to be bamboozled. It is literally the same thing.
Yeah.
It comes off the same assembly line. Now, I understand that older generations are like, no, it's not. It hasn't. Well, it didn't used to be. It now is. It's literally the cookie or the granola. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, it literally is made next to the brand product, but you're saving anywhere from like 10 to 50%. So I'm just like, I just don't want to be a sucker. I'm not going to eat the one with the different packaging.
I got one for you. Just like half and half. I call it half and half, you know, cream. A small one, not a full quart.
Yeah.
Just a small little pint. I guess the Hannaford brand, sometimes they call it something. Well, I don't know what it is. Like Nature's Best. But their brand, it was like $1.75. Another brand, another day, it was like $2.99. Same. I bet you that half and half is going to taste the same in my coffee, right?
It's going to taste exactly the same.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Inflation. Thank you, Aaron Real, NBC News Radio, national correspondent. Neil Levesque, one of our regular contributors and political analyst and all-star, is the executive director of St. Anselm College Institute of Politics. Good morning, Mr. Neil.
Good morning, Jack.
So just because you and I are a little bit unusual, I thought of you early this morning because I'm reading the background on this ABC poll on the presidential election. By the way, 2,200 voters, likely voters, 6 months. We're not that far away in a political calendar year to a presidential election, Neil. And you know this has ramifications for the governor's race here, the congressional seats, the state house. So I'm looking at this. I'm reading the ABC News poll. And for the first time, they put in Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Cornel West, and Jill Stein, sort of the third-party independents. Kennedy getting 12%. That's a spoiler number in a 5 or 6-person race, my UVM math would tell me. But what's more interesting is, like the CNN poll, Neil, Trump is leading Biden overall, but more worrisome, I would think, for Joe Biden, he's leading him in areas about who do you trust more with the economy, inflation, the U.S.-Mexican border, immigration, the war, you know, war between Israel and Hamas, Ukraine, crime. Trump, double-digit lead on trust, where Joe Biden does well, not surprisingly, abortion rights and health care. What's the takeaway from these polls, especially the ABC with a little more beef there?
I think the takeaway, first of all, it's a national poll, and national polls are sort of, you know, it's good to sort of see where the American people's heads are at. But as far as determining who's going to win, it really that's really dependent upon some of these key states and the Electoral College. That being said, I think all of the polling that we've seen in the last 2-3 months has all indicated, and this is no exception, that Trump has some wind in his sails. And if the election were held today, he would win. I think that some of the polling that shows that he's better on the economy and some of these big issues that voters are concerned about, he wins on those things. And whether it's fair or unfair towards Biden, when you're in the office, you sort of own whatever's going on. And I think the bigger issue right now is sort of this stuff that's going on campuses, which doesn't affect most Americans, but it displays this idea of lawlessness and people who are not necessarily reflecting American values. And I think that for many people, that's a thing that they're going to reject. And as a result, Biden last week cut his ties with some of this thinking and definitely separated himself and made voters aware of the fact that he was not on the side of some of these protesters, using the word protester lightly. So I think that this poll is interesting, but you know, if you thought Donald Trump lost last time and so therefore he's going to lose again, these polls indicate that voters have sort of forgotten some of the things maybe with January 6th and some of the other things that they didn't like and are now sort of thinking, who's going to help me today?
You know, Neil, it's another thing is because you are in academia and college life. I started thinking, too. The Democrat, you know, their convention, I think, is in Chicago, ironically, if you look at history. Can you imagine if these commencements are disruptive in the Democrat Party with the so-called agitators, what that convention is going to look like?
Well, you know, right now, on a personal level, I have to tell you that my daughter's going to graduate from a college in Connecticut at the end of this month. And my wife does not get energized about politics, thank God, because I am in this business. I've not seen her so energized about anything because remember, 4 years ago, most high school students didn't have a high school graduation, and now their colleges are going to get disruptive and they're going to cancel. Columbia's already canceled their graduation. I think it will probably happen with my daughter's college, so she's not going to have any graduation because of these anti-civilization people. And my wife, grandparents, in-laws, parents, they're all infuriated over this potential closure. So I think this kind of thing is bouncing against the Democrats and Joe Biden, whether fair or unfair, because they're sort of seen as the party that would embrace this.
But you know,
and
why is that?
We
Nate?
Saw
you know
this
why?
In 1968. It's not the same issue. Vietnam is a very different issue, but it definitely rhymes with what's going on, where you have average Americans who say, there is lawlessness out there. I play by the rules. These people are not. It's not fair. I'm voting for Nixon.
Right. But, Neil, there's another story, though, of why the Democrats have a more, this is more awkward for them to condemn, finally the president did last week, and correctly so, by the way, I know it's complimentary, anti-Semitism. It's because part of their own progressive base. I mean, just look at Representative Ocasio-Cortez. They actually are anti-Israel. I mean, you can't tell me they're not. So if you're a Democrat, you got to be careful because you don't want to upset your own left side or the so-called progressive squad side of the base, because they are anti-Semitic. I mean, they are. They are. Tell me they're not. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I don't know if it's anti-Semitism or it's sort of a protest culture with going back to Occupy Wall Street and all that stuff. I think that when you have the vice president and the president who have different public statements on a policy about Israel, one says that we need an immediate ceasefire, the other does not, you get sort of start getting confused about where the administration's at. They're in an awkward situation. There's no doubt about it. And but Biden was clear about the fact that he does not want ownership over these groups. And I think the mayor of New York did not hold back at all. You know, he's pretty out front about his feelings and that there were outsiders who were basically helping to organize these colleges.
Well, you know, again, I'm not gonna do a poll or get you to say it. I'm not gonna tangle with you on this, but you take the so-called squad, Tlaib. You just put them together and the far progressive side, and you tell me they're pro-Israel in this debate. No, I mean not you, but anyone. I haven't heard them condemn the anti-Semitism once. They might say they're pro-Palestine and ending the violence, but they're quietly, in my humble opinion, they don't mind when they see college students say, death to Israel, tear down the American society, death to Americans, pro-Hamas. I don't really see them disavowing themselves of a lot of that rhetoric, or maybe I'm missing something.
Well, you don't see that. Or how about this? Hamas, please let the 35 hostages go and we can end the war. You know, they don't do that. But, you know, hypocrisy is out there in politics. And and a lot of people, I think, don't really necessarily understand the situation. I mean, there's certain people who don't like war and certainly don't like death. And I can empathize with that. But, you know, there's a lot of that going around in many different places in the world. You don't see anybody protesting Russia.
Yeah. I think the Democrats do have an awkward issue here. They're more upset, especially the folks that are really passionately fired up, where I do see anti-Semitism. They're upset with the Biden administration for being so pro-Israel, so supportive of Israel. And you saw in the beginning, after the October 7th attack of the villages and the kibbutzes in Israel by Hamas, by the way, a terrorist organization, but I shouldn't have to point that out. You saw the immediate alliance support. And I said at the time, I praised the Biden administration for standing with Israel right away, for getting our fleet and our carrier force into the Middle East, for pointing the indirect warning at Hamas, or I'm sorry, Hezbollah and Tehran. Don't take advantage of this. We stood strong. And then after the situation where Israel is going after Hamas in Gaza, the loss of life, albeit of non-Hamas militants, but the casualties of war in terms of civilians, the Palestinians, and the numbers rising, you saw the Biden administration sort of change its tune a little bit. You know, saying to Netanyahu, get the humanitarian aid in there. Stop this. We want you to stop this. Now, Secretary of State Blinken, to his credit, I've become kind of a, don't fall off your chair. He's working really hard trying to get some kind of a brokered ceasefire for a lengthy period of time. It's going to be awkward now with Israel saying to folks, get out of Rafah. We're going in on the ground to finish this, to go after the Hamas militants. So I think it's changed a little bit, and Biden's feeling the heat in his own party with his base on this, in my opinion.
It's a very awkward situation, and that's why it's being used as a political situation. And I think to some degree, this is going to backfire against the left. And in a situation where we just mentioned a poll, which is razor thin, as we've seen, you don't want to have any sort of issue that's floating out there that's going to infuriate mainstream voters.
Yeah. All right. Listen, anything else? I know we kind of focused on the national stuff. We have a few moments. I am starting to feel this governor's race, both the Republicans, but especially between Chuck Morris and Kelly Ayotte. Not so much the Democrats directly. You see Ayotte or Cindy Warmington and Joyce Craig tangle a little bit with the Republicans. Not so much each other. When are we going to start to see the Warmington, Joyce Craig primary start to heat up? Because you know it is a race.
Well, if you peel back the onion, it's very hot. And a lot of people have been talking about this for quite a while. And it's interesting because Democrats usually avoid primaries, and with an open seat, if you will, an open governor seat, they are having a primary. And you've got two candidates really going at it. It's interesting. They're participating, and they're certainly going after Senator Kelly Ayotte, former senator, who's running for governor. But you're right. In the front page of the newspaper, you don't necessarily see the fighting. And I think it is going to heat up as we get towards September. Remember, we haven't gotten to the filing period. There could be more than two Democratic candidates running for governor, and we could see others do it. There's still some time before that June period when you can sign your name up.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. I don't know where everything else falls. Chris Pappas tends to be a little more difficult for people on the Republican side to unseat in that first district, and yet that's a district that used to skew better for Republicans. Second district, who knows? It's going to be up in the air. And so I think this is a very unpredictable election. And on that note, I want to end with something, Neil, you and I may not fully agree on, but that ABC News poll 6 months away, I look at that number, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., even if he is anywhere near 12%, even if 77% of the people don't know anything about him, he doesn't have to be at 12% to play a spoiler role in states like New Hampshire. So I have this theory.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't disagree with you, Jack. I think you're onto something, that a 12% number is huge. Remember, Ross Perot got 19%, so that's within that area. And if you have a candidate that's drawing 12% of the vote, and he's on the ballot in some of these key states, that's going to be the other important factor. The big question isn't that he isn't a factor. It's who's he drawing the most from. And if he's taking a lot from Biden, that's certainly not good. But I think, the fact that Trump whacked him the other day would seem to indicate they have internal numbers showing that he takes more from Trump. So I don't know yet.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's going to be an interesting run-up. All right, Neil Levesque, Institute of Politics. I appreciate it, Neil. Thank you so much. Great stuff on this Monday. Make it a good one. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Also coming up, Anna Brown, Citizens Count. Rory talking about self-service checkout to take a break on what's going on. And I've noticed this for the last couple of years. Technology makes it such it's easy to do, whether you're at Home Depot or Lowe's or your grocery store. And I've noticed the last year or two, they'll have someone standing there full-time under the auspices to help you check out. They're just watching to make sure you're checking everything out. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, and we're seeing some of the big chains, the Walmarts, the Targets, and a lot of the supermarket chains even rethink just how these machines are being deployed. They may have peaked during the pandemic as we were all trying to go for social distancing and trying to keep people safe and stop the spread of the disease. But at this point now, the stores are starting to say, you know what, we're losing too much money, either to shoplifting or people who accidentally don't scan items as they go out of the stores. And then, to your point, when you have an employee who was there at the beginning of the line directing you to a machine, an employee at the end of the line making sure you don't steal, and oftentimes an employee in the middle making sure that you can get cleared if you're buying alcohol or need that security box open to buy razor blades or just if you have a problem at the kiosk, that's three workers. You could have had three lanes open. So they're not the big labor savers that these stores thought they might be.
It's the first time I've seen technology kind of lose on its own merit because of human reality, I guess. All right, Rory. Rory, thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Good Morning New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now, back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right, Anna Brown, the Sage One, knows all the stuff happening here at home, legislatively speaking. Your elected reps, the issues, legislation, citizenscount.org, citizenscount.org, nonpartisan, bipartisan, wealth, plethora of information on all the stuff happening that affects our lives here at home. Anna Brown, good Monday morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jack. I'm doing well. And I thought it'd be interesting today to take a moment to talk about the interesting differences that are emerging between the State House and the State Senate in New Hampshire, because a lot of times we all think, oh, you know, it's all Republican, they'll all do the same thing, it's all Democrat, they'll all do the same thing. But in New Hampshire, many times I find that the State House and the State Senate are on different pages, even if the same party is in power, which is true right now. The Republicans do have a majority in the House and a majority in the Senate, of course. The House majority is very slim. On certain days, depending on how attendance goes, every now and then Democrats can squeak out a majority. But there's some big differences in a couple areas. So the first one is drug policy. And just this past week, the House killed a bill that was going to add harsher penalties for entering New Hampshire with fentanyl, you know, other sort of dealing-related fentanyl crimes. They killed those bills, said we don't need harsher penalties for these drug crimes. That's not going to help the crisis. The Senate side, meanwhile, killed a bill from the House that would have legalized certain drug checking equipment, such as fentanyl test strips. And so this is a harm reduction measure. The idea is, you know, if we can help people not overdose because fentanyl has been in their drugs and they don't realize it, this is a good thing. So the House and the Senate seem on really different pages about how New Hampshire should move forward addressing our continuing addiction crisis in this state. Should we be increasing penalties? That's what the Senate wants to do. The House disagrees. Or should we be looking at harm reduction and other sort of, you know, also something that has happened is needle exchange programs. That's another form of harm reduction, right? So that hasn't come up this year, but that's sort of where the House seems to be going, and the Senate is rejecting that. So that's an important difference. And I'm seeing similar differences when we're looking at immigration-related bills. Mm-hmm. So last week, the House was voting on a bill that had already passed the Senate, got a lot of attention, that was banning sanctuary cities in New Hampshire. Now, exactly what a sanctuary city is can be different depending on who you're talking to and what the circumstances are. But what this bill would do would require cities and towns in New Hampshire, the local law enforcement, to cooperate with immigration detainers and other federal immigration enforcement. So the Senate passed this bill. The Republicans all voted for it. Democrats all voted against it. And they said this is an important piece of, you know, fighting the immigration crisis at the southern border and also, you know, potentially at the northern border. We don't want to, you know, signal that we're a sanctuary state. Now, it goes over to the House, and the House tabled it. Now, tabling is not the same thing as killing a bill. It is possible to take a bill off the table and vote on it again at a later date. But there's a higher threshold of votes over time. And given how late we are in the session and everything that's going on, I think if this bill does move forward, it might be part of other negotiations in terms of high priority legislation that the Senate wants to pass. And then the House can say, all right, here's our high priority legislation. Let's make a deal. So certainly it wasn't a slam dunk on banning sanctuary cities in the House. And meanwhile, there's another bill that I'm not convinced mm-hmm. the House is going to get on board with either that was also immigration related. So SB 504 was going to allow, in the North Country particularly, aiming at that northern border once again, arresting people for trespassing on open lands unless they're specifically there for, you know, hiking or birding or camping right. or something like that. So, and the controversy is there. Okay, how do you really determine if someone's there for hiking or not? You know, it's sort of gray area, but Senator Jeb Bradley in particular, I know, was a big advocate for this in the state Senate and said we need this. I'm not sure how it's going to play in the House. I'm not sure it's going to move forward. I think they are definitely kind of suspicious of overly involving law enforcement in anything. I think it's sort of that libertarian streak in the House. So it's important to remember, even if you're in the voting booth, just because it's a D or an R, here we have an example where the R's in the House and the R's in the Senate are on very different pages.
Real quickly, Anna, you referenced Jeb Bradley, Senate President, Republican. He was on the show Friday morning, of course, regularly reflecting on his career, announcing his retirement, not running again for the Senate. What is the reaction of Anna Brown on Jeb Bradley in terms of, you know, because it's kind of a big year with the changing of the guard. Governor Sununu not running again, four terms not running. Ann Custer, 2nd District, retiring. Jeb Bradley, not running again.
I'm definitely looking at some of these individuals and hoping to myself that we are going to get other moderates and that we are not going to have a primary process that really pushes us to the extremes. Because the way our winner-take-all primaries work, we have been tending in our democracy to get those more extreme candidates to the left and the right. Jeb Bradley is known for forging some major compromises, you know, when you're talking about right. Medicaid expansion, for example. Right. And I know that he's gotten some heat for Democrats in recent years because of, for example, his work attempting to, you know, limit critical race theory in trainings and teachings and education. I know he got a lot of heat for that. But once again, he was trying to forge a compromise to get something across the line. So him leaving, that changing of the guard could be hugely significant because, right. once again, who's going to be that forger of compromise? Who's going right. to be the person who says, you know, I'm not all the way to the extreme? So it's definitely a change that I'm watching with trepidation, but I'm hopeful that, you know, New Hampshire voters are going to continue to be aware. We've had, you know, Governor Sununu, frankly, is another person who is very polarizing in some ways, but in other ways, you know, known for being not far right, has criticized Trump, has said that he's pro-choice. And of course, I know there are plenty of Democrats listening who would say, well, you know, X, Y, Z that Governor Sununu has done. And of course, but nonetheless, let's compare him to many other Republican right. governors in the country. So yeah. that's another person that we're losing who has, you know, been more about, I go my own way, I forge compromise right. and so on. So definitely something for voters to think about going into this year.
6 months, give or take, to the presidential election, which is hard to believe. Before I go there, just one last local question. Anna Brown, Citizens Count. Legalized marijuana for recreational use. Where is that at in the Senate?
They're still working on it, and I think that this is ultimate. I think the Senate is going to put forward a version that is more, you know, most likely to have Governor Sununu's support. I think they're basically taking what the House gave and said, well, that's nice, but there's no way we're going to get that to Governor Sununu's desk, so we're going to do our version. So I think it's all going to come down to that final negotiation between the House and Senate and if they can get on the same page. Because it already seems, when you're looking at the testimony that Senator Daryl Abbas, for example, gave before a House committee, they seem to know what Governor Sununu will approve, what a Senate majority will approve. So it's going to be, can the House get on board with that, mm-hmm. and can Sununu get on board with that?
Nationally, Neil Levesque was on earlier, St. Anselm Institute of Politics, and I've talked about it this morning. I think this ABC national poll, not local, national, 2,200 adults likely to vote in November is telling, because it's on the heels of the CNN poll last week. And this is probably more overall good news for Donald Trump than Joe Biden, especially on the trustworthy issues of economy, inflation, the U.S.-Mexican border, immigration, Middle East war situations, as well as crime and so forth. Biden scores well on abortion rights and health care. Trump has double-digit lead on these other areas of trust. My question to you is, one thing few people didn't pick up is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s, they put him in the poll, in that same poll I'm talking about, ABC News, 2,200 Americans. And they also put in Cornel West and Jill Stein, who basically 1-2%. This is interesting. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., it's national, 12%. Now, it may seem insignificant, but if this is a 5 or 6 point race between Biden and Trump, in states like New Hampshire, for example, anything over 10 points, Kennedy can play a spoiler role if he gets on enough ballots. Am I right or wrong?
I definitely think Kennedy can play a spoiler role in any swing state, right? Just a few percentage points can make a difference.
And what decides, you know, elections? Swing states. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to go, you know, just right. Florida in the 2000 election, they've done the analysis, and it's most likely that Ralph Nader was the margin that really, you know, tipped it so that it was so tight between Gore and Bush in that state. And, of course, we know that ended up going to the Supreme Court with the recounts, and it was a whole hoopla. So I would definitely say that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be a target probably of both campaigns. I think that they're both going to be very concerned about losing any of those voters at the margins because they both know they'll have their base. They both know that, you know, Biden's hardcore left base, I think, is going to absolutely be voting against Trump. And I think Trump's hardcore core base has been proven, you know, that they are extremely loyal and fired up. So where does it come out? It's that margin of the middle. So I would expect to see more attacks on RFK from both sides, frankly.
All right, Anna Brown, great stuff. CitizensCount.org. Make it a great Monday, Anna.
Thanks, Jack.
Tom Raphael, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, with some good news on this Monday. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's start, you and I, let's start, because I listened to your conversation with Brad Card about the hockey. You seem to be really excited by Pasta's goal that he...
It was a well-executed... It wasn't just a throw... They practiced that. Well, they didn't just throw it in the corner there. And not, Tom, not to bring up, you know, history, but Sanderson was in the corner when he passed out to Orr, but Orr was right going right in front of the net like Pasta did, ironically. But that dumping pass off the boards, Pasta raced in, the Jets go on, he get the puck behind the defense. Next thing you know, a little deke and the game's over.
Exactly. And it's funny you mentioned the famous Derek Sanderson to Bobby Orr, because I'm actually looking at that photo in my office of Orr in the air, which, you know, a famous Boston Herald photographer took the photo. So anyway, but speaking of running, I did a race on Sunday, the Cinco de Mayo 5K in Bedford. It was a lot of fun. We had thousands of people. And then I raced home and took a shower and went off to Bristol, New Hampshire, because I had an engagement with the particular Boy Scout troop that uses at one of the cabins in the Bristol area for kind of like their own little retreat. So I did a talk on leadership and how it relates to the Boy Scout oath. Yeah, so basically, they were impressed that I could cite without looking at notes, you know, a Boy Scout is trustworthy, loyal, kind, and all, et cetera. And they joined in with me, and then they were very engaging, and I related a lot of what they're learning as young men to the success that I've had in the company, because a lot of it has to relate to being honest, dedicated, trustworthy, all the ideals.
It's called virtues. Virtues.
There you go. I know in today's world it's hard to, you know, sort of be proud of that stuff. But
it isn't, and we shouldn't, and we should. And first of all, thank you. It's great. I think scouting, both for young guys and gals, because we're seeing it grow. But Bristol's a great area. But no, I think virtue is a good thing. And Tom, when we look at, you don't have to go there. I do, because we have time. I'm not going to ask you to kind of give your two cents on commencements being canceled because of the new term in our society, agitators. But there are tremendous young folks out there who may not make the most noise. I've met some wonderful students through our Penman Pride segment with Southern Hampshire University. Some of the younger folks who've gone into the military. I met a young gentleman. Just a good story for you. I'll make this quick, Tom. I was out and about in Portsmouth the other night and getting some takeout, and a friend of a friend introduced me to his son. He's early 20s. He's joining a special program through the Navy to become a special teams medic. He was a lifeguard way back at Hampton Beach. He just has this calling in him to serve and save lives. And I'm going, wow, I just met him. There are many, many good young people out there with virtue.
You're absolutely right.
And the scouts that I met Navy SEALs who were actually, you're gonna laugh this, they were Eagle Scouts.
And, I'm not surprised. I did tell the boys I didn't quite make it to Eagle because my family moved, but you can still instill all of those values in a young man, and it really has positioned me as a leader of adults now. So, and you're right, I meet some incredible
and look at you through the Miss New Hampshire stuff, the young woman. It's really about education and scholarships. Look at the cost of education today. It's really about education. Look at the caliber. And J-Doc helped me out, but our own the Crossroads Chiropractor.
Dr. Stephanie.
Her daughter. What an outstanding young person.
Yeah. So they're both, when I was talking to Dr. Brooks, she was saying, Mills, that, her mother was Miss New Hampshire in the 90s, then she became Miss New Hampshire last year, and then became a chiropractor herself. And a lot of the scholarship dollars, you know, that we give out via the STEM Award, Northeast Delta, and then a host of other awards, you know, that enabled her to, to go to school and, come out ready, ready to roll. So, yeah, there's plenty of great stories, and, of course, we don't hear about them, but there are a lot of kids, I I just got this email. I'm a Harvard grad like your dad, and I just got this email from the interim president that they want to clear the encampment so they can have the graduation. So hopefully they do. So the other good news stuff is that tonight, even though I'm a jock, Jack, I am actually chair of the New Hampshire Business Committee for the Arts. So it's a gala that we have in Manchester, and we give out a lot of arts awards for artists, but also businesses that support arts, because I'm a big believer that businesses should support the arts, because without the arts, there's no civility. And then on Friday, we had a group here at 2 Delta talking from the New Hampshire Center for Nonprofits, and we're really galvanizing all the different nonprofits that are in New Hampshire to gear up for New Hampshire Gives, because nonprofits, whether it's the arts like the Hampshire Business Committee for the Arts or the Arthritis Foundation, which I also chair, they're all needed in New Hampshire the way we operate our community, which is fantastic. And that's why I never looked back once I moved up here, because you can make such a difference. And this radio forum has been great for me, because it's allowed me to really educate the veterans out there who call me at 223-1300 if you're in oral health pain. And we've gone over the $1.1 million mark in investing in our veterans, and I'm looking forward to Veterans Count Day. I'll be in one of the afternoon segments.
Yes, Jack. You are. Yep. Well, Tom, thank you so much.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
The warmer weather.
Yeah,
today.
And I will, and I'll talk to you Friday. Thanks a lot.